Obviously, a change of administration come November is very likely to have an impact almost regardless of which way the result goes, because as we've seen in this election cycle, quite surprisingly, crypto has bubbled its way up the agenda. It's not the number one agenda item, but it has got itself onto the agenda. And I think both the Democratic and Republican sides understand that the US electorate wants to see something done. Now, exactly the shape of that will obviously boil down to which administration we see, but I think that it's very clear that both sides have now heard the voice of the electorate, and that is that something needs to be done.
You're listening to CFB Talks Digital Assets, the home of informed conversation about crypto for institutions building the future of finance, presented by CF Benchmarks. Hey everybody, thank you very much for joining us for another episode of CFB Talks Digital Assets. I'm Ken O'Delager, Head of Content, and I'm joined as usual by my colleague, Gabe Selby, who's Head of Research. Hi, Gabe.
Hey, Ken. Always a pleasure to be with you. And excited. What do we have in store today for our viewers and listeners?
Indeed, what do we have in store? This is probably one of the most pivotal, certainly the most important episodes we've done of the year. We've had a few, let's face it, but this would be one of them. And the reason is that although I think most people would agree this year has been absolutely pivotal for crypto as the asset class in general, but certainly for CF Benchmarks, we are now at another inflection point with the launch of US spot based Ether ETFs. Now, these are beginning trading as we speak. And that clearly is a massively important moment, another one for CF Benchmarks and for the asset class as a whole. So to that end, we are joined again by our CEO, Mr. Sui Cheng, to talk about, number one, the new ETH ETFs that are launching, and of course, what this might mean for the asset class, for exchange-traded crypto going forward as a whole. So Sui, thank you very much indeed for joining us again.
Hi Ken, it's great to be here on such an exciting day for the asset class and all of the investors out there.
Indeed. So to begin things off, Sui, I'd like to ask you, obviously one of the most intriguing aspects of the approval process to date, not just for Ether, but also for Bitcoin as well, is that how the issuer applications, the S1s, evolve or have evolved over time. Once you get that signal from the SEC that this potentially could be a goer, what seems to happen, none of this is written down, is an informal process of amendments and sort of changes updates, meaning essentially new S1s being filed, which brings them into line with what the SEC wants to see. So what I want to ask you is, what I want to get at is, how are these final S1s for the Ether ETFs, how have they evolved, and what is it in them that do you think the SEC has decided, yes, these are approvable? What is it the SEC has been trying to bring about?
Yeah, that's a good question, Ken. A bit of an inside baseball question into the whole S1 approval process in the US. I think that there's a number of different elements to the S1s that have changed and have been added to since the 19b4 approval a few months ago. But primarily what you're talking about is disclosure. So primarily in the US system, in the US regulatory system, S1s are about disclosure. They are about disclosing to potential investors as much as possible about how a product works. How does it work? What is it trying to do? What will an investor end up owning? And then what are the risks to the thing that the investor will own, in this case Ether, and what are the risks to the ETF not working as intended? And so it's really around that disclosure process. And with crypto, it's still very novel. I don't know how many ETFs and S1s have been filed for equities. I think there are something like 4,000 equity ETFs out there. There are obviously about 20,000 listed stocks out there. So when filing prospectuses and S1s for companies and for equity ETFs, we've had a lot of history. Almost everything that is required to be disclosed is known. Now, with crypto, that's not the case. There is a little bit of a how long is a piece of string. There's a lot of technical information, a lot of architectural information about a crypto network, about a blockchain network. And the question is, what needs disclosing and what doesn't? And so if we go back to the experience with Bitcoin, as the index provider to 6 of the 10 spot Bitcoin ETFs, we were obviously asked by the ETF issuers to add content to the S1s that explain the BRRNY, the benchmark index, and CF benchmarks as a company and our regulated status, et cetera, et cetera. So we were involved in that drafting process. And I recall that the first draft of the S1s that came our way for the addition of CF benchmarks comments was, I think, something like 70 pages long. And then by the end, the final S1s that were approved were about 124 pages
long.
So I think that gives you some sense of the amount of disclosure that the SEC is looking for, and it's substantial.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And in this case, talking about the spot Ether ETFs, there's been a similar process. But one thing that kind of stood out, and we've actually highlighted this on our blog, if you search, news and insights and a comment letter, the aspect played within this process by the CF Benchmarks comment letter has actually got a little bit of airtime, because it looks like, I mean, I can't necessarily definitively say this is the case, but it looks like our comment letter filed on behalf of the clients that we are providing the benchmark for their spot Ether ETFs for, our comment letter seems to have flipped the SEC from, opposition to, approvability, if you want to put it that way. I mean, is that a fair reading? It certainly looks that way. Would you agree?
I don't know if I could. I don't think we can quite lay claim to flipping the SEC on this one. I think that our comment letter laid out what we felt were the two key prongs to how the SEC should have looked at whether to approve or disapprove spot Ether ETFs, and that was all based around the bar that the SEC had itself set in the approval of spot Bitcoin ETFs. So, to us, there were two main questions. One was around whether Ether was a commodity at all. And therefore, you've got to remember that these ETFs were proposed as commodity ETFs. So the first thing is Ether a commodity? And in answer to that question, our view was that every single regulatory authority in the USA, when asked the question of what Ether is, has responded it is a commodity. We can see that from the futures and options listed on the CME that are solely under CFTC regulatory jurisdiction, and that only applies to commodity futures and options contracts. So that's one. Two, we saw Ether futures ETFs that are already listed, have already been listed for over a year in the US. They were listed as commodity futures ETFs. So again, it's that commodity phrasing and that commodity regulatory framework that has been applied. And most importantly, finally, is that even in the SEC's own enforcement actions, which it took against a number of crypto exchanges at the beginning of last year, they cited the fact that certain crypto exchanges had listed for trading unregistered securities. And they cited a list of cryptos that they believed to be unregistered securities. And Ether was not one of them.
Indeed.
Even though Ether is listed for trading by all of the crypto exchanges that the SEC has brought enforcement action against. So by the actions and inactions of the SEC, it was very clear. At least the record showed that it was very clear that the SEC up to that point believed Ether to be a commodity.
Yeah.
So that's question number one. Question number two, that the second component, the second bar, if you like, is around how closely correlated Ether, spot Ether is, its trading, how closely correlated spot Ether trading is with Ether futures that are listed on the CME and regulated by the CFTC. Because if they show high correlation, if they show tight correlation, then that means that any manipulation of the spot market is likely to show up in the futures market as well. And because the futures market is a regulated market, the CFTC would have the ability to seek to identify the individuals who have conducted that market manipulation and hence would be able to share that information with the stock exchanges that list the ETFs and hence would assure that fraudulent and manipulative trading actions, if they were to occur, would be able to be discovered and the perpetrators would be able to be discovered by the SEC. So those were the two bars. And we evidenced, one, that Ether was indeed has been treated as a commodity, and two, that the correlation between spot Ether trading and Ether futures trading on the whole shows a stronger correlation than Bitcoin, spot Bitcoin and Bitcoin futures did in the run-up up to the point of approval. And in fact, that our phrasing of it, our specific phrasing of on the whole tighter correlation was indeed quoted by the SEC in its approval itself, yeah. Order.
Indeed. Gabe, I want to get you into this in a second, but I just wanted to move a little bit forward and note that, of course, as Sui has been saying, CF Benchmarks is again playing a central role in this process of this new asset that's being brought into the regulated arena, Ether, because, of course, fully four of the applicants are using our regulated Ether benchmark, the CME CF Ether dollar reference rate, the New York variant. So that's the one that has a cut references the price of Ether against a dollar at 4 p.m. New York time. So that's the one thing. Now, there are two points that we can sort of bring to bear when we sort of make that observation. The first one being, we have like four of the, I think it's 11 or 10 sort of applicants that are listing Ether ETFs. Four of them are using one benchmark. Now, Sweet, what I wanted to ask you was, because of that, is it feasible to expect, just like in the case of Bitcoin, where I think it's still about 60% of the assets that reference our Bitcoin benchmark, with this ETF, because it's four, is it feasible to expect that CF Benchmarks will price the majority or at least the single largest tranche of Ether ETF assets that are going to list on these US exchanges? Or is it a bit too diffuse for that to be the case?
That's a good question, Ken. I think that it's very likely that that will be the case. It's very likely that as the asset inflows come in, given who the issuers that CF Benchmarks is supporting are, that is BlackRock, 21 Shares, US, Franklin Templeton, and Bitwise, these four issuers have been pretty successful with their Bitcoin offerings. And you know, these Ether ETFs are very much a fast follow onto those Bitcoin offerings. So I think it's a fair assumption to make that whatever assets flow into these spot Ether ETFs, probably the majority will reside with the four issuers that I just mentioned.
Well, I just think it's pretty fascinating to, one, get Sui's perspective on these more technical aspects of ETF filing and how the U.S. regulatory body here, the SEC, works.
Yeah, I think that the SEC is guided by the Securities and Exchange Act, of course, the piece of legislation that is now pretty old, but they're having to apply it to a very novel situation. So dare I say it, they're on a bit of a learning curve as well. I think this is where, from the outside, it can seem can seem very uncoordinated by the SEC because you have this 19B4 process, you have this S1 process, and you have to remember as well that the two processes, the 19B4 and the S1 process, they're two separate processes undertaken by two separate divisions within the SEC. They don't necessarily talk to each other. So, you know, when we're observing from the outside, we think of, you know, this one process, you know, the outcome that you look that we're all trying to discern is whether spot ether ETFs will be listed at all, and we think of it as one process, but in fact it's two separate processes that takes place inside the SEC amongst two divisions that, yeah, how much they talk to each other is an open question. And so it is, you know, it is pretty tricky to follow. It's a bit like watching a soap opera where you're watching the soap opera, but there are two separate writing teams writing the episodes.
That's a good analogy.
So it can be a bit hard to follow. It may not be the best way, potentially, from an outside perspective, to think about how you should produce something like this. But for very good reasons, you know, the SEC needs different types of expertise and therefore different divisions to opine on and decide upon different aspects of any potential product launches.
Maybe we can just jump back into this, what we like to refer to here as the liquidity complex. And we've seen this dynamic play out on the Bitcoin side. And myself and Mark, my fellow research analysts here at CFB, we've talked a little bit about this price singularity dynamic and how this is kind of, you know, liquidity kind of begets more liquidity. And you start to see all these interesting types of trades happening because you have the price singularity between the spot price on these ETFs and these regulated futures on the CME. Do you feel like this is gonna unfold similarly on the Ether side as well?
Yes, I think it's very likely that it will unfold this, you know, in exactly the same way as the Ether side, at a lower scale, right? So I think that, you know, most commentators, and myself included, I don't anticipate the level of inflow into the spot Ether ETFs as we saw in the first couple of months of the spot Bitcoin ETFs. I think it will be a slower burn for the Ether ETFs. And so therefore, many of the different trading strategies that we've seen that you've written about are likely to be made available again. The opportunity will be there, just on a slightly smaller scale. And so, yes, liquidity will beget liquidity, but I do think we'll be talking about slightly smaller numbers.
I think this is a really good opportunity to transition over to some of these expectations that we're seeing for these products. I think it is fair to assume that it would be highly unlikely that the Ether demand exceeds the Bitcoin demand that we saw earlier this year, which set records not just for, obviously, like a commodity-based product, or it set records for any type of ETF. Really, it was the most successful. We saw like the most successful launches in history with these products. So I think that's a fair assumption to make. However, I do think some analysts are kind of setting the bar pretty low. And I think the reason that I can kind of see a connection here, they're probably using the Hong Kong case study where we saw the Hong Kong spot Ether and Bitcoin ETFs launched together. And those launches resulted into a breakout into about 15% Ether and the rest going into Bitcoin. So I think, you know, that's kind of like what we're seeing as far as when people draw that 10 to 15% number, is they're just kind of drawing the parallel simply across the board over to here. What's your opinion on that low bar being set, Sui?
Yeah, it's obviously very hard to tell at this stage. We have had less media coverage. I think that's important to note. When the spot Bitcoin ETFs were approved and in the run-up to trading, you know, I think it was fair to say they pretty much dominated the financial sort of cable news cycle, and the Ether ETFs haven't done that. So in terms of awareness, the awareness is lower. Whether it should be 10 to 15% or 20 to 25, etc., I'm not sure. I do think that the initial phase, the first 2 or 3 months, inflows will be lower, significantly lower. I think that over the longer term, however, over the next sort of 18 months, I think we may very well find that over time, that gap in terms of how much inflow each set, Bitcoin versus Ether, gathers will close quite significantly, because I think that, you know, the reason why that take-up of Ether initially will be slower and will take time to ramp up is because there's just a lot more to unpack with Ether. There's a lot more to try and understand. It has an investment thesis that is not purely driven by scarcity, so it's less of the digital gold narrative, and it is more a technology platform, network effects, utility investment thesis for Ether. And that just requires more education. It requires, if convincing an interested investor, if going through all the details around why Bitcoin for an investor that has some interest takes, say, 2 or 3 meetings, then for an investor who has an interest in Ether, is curious about Ether, to get through everything is going to take 6-7 meetings. So, and fundamentally, that is how investment decisions are made. Investors have an interest in something. They want to learn. They need to learn about all the various nuances, about the various risks, about the investment thesis, what the upside potential looks like, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And for Ether, that just takes longer.
One of our former guests, actually, on the podcast, Matt Hugan, who's very well known in our space, obviously, he's the CIO of Bitwise, the crypto first investment management firm. Again, one of our clients. And now, what he said on this particular aspect was, in his view and in his experience, what he sees clients doing is buying both. So buying both Bitcoin and Ether. Obviously, that seems to suggest or imply some degree of pre-awareness or already, you know, sort of like a built up awareness within those clients. But it does, again, play to the whole idea about, in terms of like bifurcation, more like supplementary or supplementation. So you'd buy one, you know, if you didn't know or you weren't aware, fully apprised of the information about Ether, you'd definitely buy Bitcoin. But then eventually you would actually buy Ether as well if you were already interested, you know, and minded to be involved in the asset class of digital assets. You would probably go for both. And that should actually imply a higher quantum of adoption through ETFs eventually. Again, it's a bit of a time-based thing. What do you guys think about that?
Let me first add a little bit of color on some other parallels that we could draw with this Bitcoin Ether kind of question. And certainly Matt's takes are fantastic. If you look at their team, these are folks that have been boots on the ground since day one of operating in this space. And they've really built their firm and reputation around meeting with advisors in like this hand-to-hand combat way. So if he says, you know, they're going to be kind of combining things up into an allocation or pairing them, I would probably say, yeah, he's probably got a good intel or good read on that. But I think there's some numbers that we could kind of throw out here for the listeners and the viewers that will kind of help paint a fuller picture. So if we look at the market cap between Bitcoin, it's usually floating around, let's say around 1.1 trillion right now. Ether's at approximately 360 billion. So let's just say that's like roughly one third of Bitcoin's, right? It's about like 33% or so. Now, if you look at the global fund asset distribution, you've seen that Ether's consistently lagged relative to its market cap distribution. So on global fund flows, global fund assets, Bitcoin holds around 64 billion, while Ether holds approximately 12.8. So that gives you a global fund share of approximately 20%. So I would say, and I think Matt's been talking about this a little bit too, and I think there is potential for upside surprise. Because if we're setting such a low bar of 10 to 15%, you know, for spot Ether fund flows in comparison to Bitcoin, when we know the distribution on the existing fund assets and the existing market capitalization of these two assets is actually quite higher, you can see how this could drift just naturally up. And I think the U.S. market is just a particularly different market than where we've seen other, you know, launches. So in Hong Kong, you typically see a lot of fundraising. And we certainly saw that be the case with these spot products launched in April. And then you kind of see a kind of less fund flows follow after that. In the US, with the spot Bitcoin ETFs, they had actually quite a lot lower fundraising compared to Hong Kong, but the fund flows were tremendous, and they, you know, and they continue to kind of ebb and flow and pick up speed as demand, you know, continues to kind of evolve. But no, I think there is still, you know, some upside surprise potential for these products with such a low bar being set. But what Sui was talking about earlier with the dynamic of education, teaching clients the investment thesis of Ether, is something that I think is being floated around as well as being kind of a hindrance. And I think there's going to be maybe some potential to draw some traditional finance parallels to the Ethereum use case, to the Ethereum investment thesis, that maybe advisors can grab onto and share with their clients, and it might help with this distribution of these products going forward. So,
yeah, I think you wrote a paper that will actually be of, I think, to me, great help in that respect, Gabe. What was it called?
Well, we're going to be releasing a research report here, and by the time this airs, it's probably going to be out. It's called A Strategic Asset for the Decentralized Economy. This paper is very similar to the Bitcoin paper that we launched around the same time with the spot products in January, and it'll break down, you know, what is Ether, what's Ethereum. There's a lot of nuance there. You have to understand the two between the token and the blockchain. And then we dive a little bit deeper into like the investment thesis, and we highlight a lot of interesting takes on that. And then we also show readers, you know, how they can actually implement this into their portfolio and why it's an attractive asset to allocate into.
Yeah, I just wanted to underline that actually, because, you know, of course, there's a scope for, you know, blowing our own trumpet here, especially the trumpet of the research team. But on the other hand, this is a real thing. This is a real challenge. The educational aspect, both for the advisors who will be, you know, mediating this new asset to their clients, and also for the clients themselves. It's a major hurdle, potentially, to get over the differences between Ether and Bitcoin. And having read Gabe's paper, also written by the research team, Gabe and Mark, who we mentioned earlier, I would say that this should be the Bible of anyone who is tasked with getting educated about the basics of Ethereum, and also tasked with getting their clients apprised of the basics to the extent that they're confident and you know, more comfortable making an investment decision. I really do think so. So do look out for that. Right. So the next thing we wanted to explore was the fact that, although, of course, this is a major inflection point, I think you can't really overestimate it being major. One of another peculiar thing about it is that, regardless of that, the sort of regulatory decisions that the SEC has made to actually bring this inflection point about obviously have an implication for further digital assets that could, maybe might, be approved within the ETF wrapper going forward. So, you know, we need to explore, you know, how this came about so that we can actually understand, you know, the aspect of further digital assets being wrapped within the ETF wrapper, you know, the scope for it going forward. So on that front, of course, we have actually seen a number of issuers, some of them familiar, some of them less familiar, actually filing applications to list Solana ETFs. Now, you know, Solana is another, obviously, digital asset that veers away from the Bitcoin model. It's not proof of work. It's has some elements of proof of stake, but also has another consensus mechanism people have dubbed proof of history. So this is another, and also includes staking. Now, one thing I wanted to ask you, Sui, we've got, again, some particularly good vantage point from this point of view. Would you agree that the circumstances and implied regulatory conditions for the approval of Ether ETFs, you know, do suggest a more protracted wait before we will see a Solana ETF? What's your view about that generally?
Yeah, good question, Ken. I think the wait could indeed be very protracted. Now, obviously, there's an election in November, and I think that regardless of the outcome in terms of whether it's Democratic or Republican, it will also very likely mean a changing of the guard at the SEC. So Gensler, who is obviously a Democrat, probably won't stay at the SEC, even if the Democrats win the election. He'll probably move on. So there's definitely going to be a changing of the guard at the SEC in February, March time. The question is just how big a change. But I think that unless there's a seismic change at the SEC, we're not going to see a Solana ETF in 2025. And that, you know, if I just wind back to what I spoke about earlier in terms of the SEC's decision making and our own comment letter and our contribution to that, you know, remember those two prongs. First prong, is it a commodity? Is this going to be filed as a commodity ETF? Now on that score, number one, there are no CME futures, that, you know, there are no CFTC regulated futures contracts referencing Solana. So that regulatory precedent, if you like, has not been set. And actually it's even graver than that for Solana, in that the SEC has cited Solana as an unregistered security in its suits against a number of crypto exchanges. So it would seem, right now at least, that regulatory precedent would tell us that it's at least thought of as an unregistered security, and hence security, number one. And then number two, as I said, there are no CFTC regulated futures contracts to compare the pricing of spot Solana to. So on both those counts, those things are lacking. And so at least under the existing framework of how spot crypto ETFs have been approved by the SEC, Solana will not meet those existing bars. Mm-hmm. So now, that's not to say the bars will be completely different under a new SEC. That could very well happen. But if there are new bars to be set, they will take time to set. And so therefore, 2025, in my view, is a non-starter.
Wow. Okay. So then the motivation for, you know, some of these large asset managers who we've seen actually putting in applications to list them spot Solana, what do you think that is? What's driving that, do you think?
Well, there is a possibility of a seismic change at the SEC. That's certainly possible. There is also the possibility that the SEC will be preempted by legislative action from Congress. You know, that again is a non-zero possibility. That is a possibility. And, you know, filing an S1, putting a marker down, is relatively inexpensive. So, you know, one could think of it as a regulatory lottery ticket that some of these asset managers have availed themselves of. Good for them. And as we've seen, you know, sometimes politics can move very quickly, regulations can move quickly, and they could find themselves in a very opportune spot. But in our view, it's unlikely.
Here's a question I think most listeners want to know right now, given where this conversation is going, is do you feel like there's going to be a Solana futures launch recently, soon, or in the near future? Can we discuss that, or is it something that we can share?
Well, it's obviously, you know, although as index provider to the largest derivatives exchange for regulated derivatives exchange that hosts crypto derivatives contracts, you know, we work very closely with the CME. But fundamentally, the launch of any futures contract is CME's prerogative. And, you know, this isn't a subject that we've broached directly, but I know that the team at CME, led very ably by Giovanni Vicioso, you know, they're very diligent about understanding investor demand and understanding what CME users want to see, and at the same time, understanding what regulators, particularly the CFTC, what they need to be comfortable with having contracts launch. And so they're always sort of balancing those two out. So they're always seeking to update that. And I'm sure that when the stars align, when the client demand is there and the regulatory authorities give a clear indication as to what they would want to see and how they want to see it done, that I'm sure the very able team at CME will square that circle.
So guys, that was really interesting. Just to sign things off, just to round things off, actually, one thing that we should actually indulge in is a little bit of, obviously, do a victory lap, but you know, we'll do that anyway. But you know, think about the implications of this, because we've lived through this year, and in a way, it's almost like I almost can't grasp the importance of it fully, because we're actually living it at the same time, right? So here's one way we can actually try and you know, bridge that gap. What do you think the ETH ETF approvals mean, maybe distinct or maybe in conjunction with the spot Bitcoin ETFs? What do you actually think they mean for the asset class going forward, regulatory, you know, adoption wise, you know, you name it, throw it all in if you so wish. Sui, you go first.
Yeah, thank you, Ken. I think that it's got to be looked at in combination. I think you're looking at spot Bitcoin ETFs and spot Ether ETFs. And now, you know, listed on stock exchanges. And more importantly for me, you have major asset managers in the form of the BlackRocks, Franklin Templeton's, Fidelities of this world, and their distribution forces, their salespeople, their research capabilities, all educating investors of all stripes, from the largest institutions, from your CalPERS all the way down to your mom and pop investors, through the various channels that they have, educating all those investors about the proposition that Bitcoin brings. You know, Bitcoin, digital scarcity, store of value, a publicly accessible blockchain network that can be observed by anybody with a computer and to be fair, a fair degree of sophistication around how to use that computer, allied with Ether, right? Smart contract functionality, Turing complete blockchain network, decentralized applications, proof of stake, staking, etc. You know, when you put up those two lists together, we're talking about 90% of the crypto feature set, effectively, right? If you understand all those things we talked about with Bitcoin, plus the things we just talked about with Ether, then you understand 90% of the crypto feature set. And remember, we're talking about the distribution capabilities of the BlackRocks, the Fidelities, the Franklin Templetons out there educating investors on this 90% of the crypto feature set. In 18 months' time, it is very, very likely that every investor in the US, every substantial investor in the US, will have heard about all of these features from the institutions such as BlackRock, Franklin Templeton, Fidelity, etc., right? And then over the next 3 years, they're going to hear it more and more. And so that level of understanding, the degree of understanding of what the value proposition of the networks and the digital asset itself, you know, Bitcoin and Ether itself, that degree of understanding is going to be very, very powerful. And that, you know, you're talking about an information explosion, an education explosion for the crypto feature set that is certainly in the US, is greater than any other 18-month period in history in the US. So I think that's not to be underestimated. And I think that the other, and this part is specific to Ether, I think it's going to be very, very interesting. To me, it's going to be absolutely fascinating when major technology companies will allocate and invest into Ether, and that becomes public knowledge, through whether that's through a 13F filing or whether through a corporate announcement. Because I think it's, you know, the Ether proposition as, you know, as a piece of technology, software, infrastructure that is use case agnostic, that lots of use cases can utilize, means it is much more likely to be adopted by existing major technology companies as one prong of their corporate strategy, much more likely so than Bitcoin. So I think that that is something that I'm looking forward to seeing. And I'm intrigued about what the reaction from investors to that and the market at large to that will be.
Well, I thought that was very well said. And to kind of just build on it, I really like that last piece where we're talking about technological or technology companies potentially adding, you know, to Ether and having that, developing on the blockchain, on a decentralized blockchain like Ethereum, and maintaining, a consistent amount of gunpowder, if you will, or amount of Ether so they can be utilized and execute transactions on it. And that's kind of similar to how we've seen already with Bitcoin as far as its technological offering as being a decentralized store of value. We've seen pensions start to allocate into Bitcoin to help, reach their defined liability targets, because they know that that's an asset that has historically shown an ability to maintain purchasing power better than even equities. And so it's become a pretty good hedge over time to meet your liability targets if you're running a pension system. For me, I think the approval of spot Ether in some ways can be viewed a little bit more significant than the approval of spot Bitcoin ETFs from a blockchain technology standpoint. We all know the differences, or most of us know the differences between the blockchain layer one like Bitcoin, where it's non-programmable and it's primarily used as a store of value. And now we know that there's this other programmable blockchain, such as Ethereum. And we know the fundamental value points that we've seen empirically on the Ethereum blockchain in terms of its fee generation as the network continues to grow, as developers continue to find real-world use cases. And so, this year we've seen a lot of attention on tokenization of real-world assets, such as BlackRock's Buildle Fund, which, is basically tokenizing short-term paper treasury instruments and providing almost like a money market fund that's been tokenized, and people can, get exposure to it in and out through the blockchain. It's using Ethereum. So it's the early stages, and what it means to me as far as the approval of this ETF is kind of a stamp of legitimacy for the industry and the blockchain technology overall. When we look at the next phases of how this technology can transform people's lives going forward in the future, it's not going to just be maybe about, a store of value proposition, but you're going to see developers feel more confident to devote their time and energy to building on this platform. And I think that's a really big deal for the future. And it might not come, 2024 might not be the year where we see, the other digital assets all become institutionalized, or maybe even 2025. But I think as far as a pivot point, this is quite significant.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, Sui, thank you very much indeed for joining us again. One thing I would note, obviously correlation doesn't mean causation, but every time we actually have Sui on, something major happens with, adoption or, this is quite consistent, adoption or even approval of some sort of exchange traded crypto product. So I just think, I don't know what will happen the next time we're going to have you on. But nevertheless, it's been absolutely instructive and informative, and a little bit, internal to actually congratulate you on this success. But it has been that kind of year where, congratulations do seem to be in order, because this has happened in large part because of your dogged insistence that it should happen. So we've all got to say well done, and thanks a lot for joining us again.
No, thank you very much, Ken, and always great to chat again. Always great to chat, Gabe. All the best.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. So, Gabe, exciting times continue, basically. I feel a little bit punch drunk, if I'm being absolutely honest. This year has been just kind of slightly unbelievable, slightly surreal, but here we are. We've now got spot Ether ETFs in the US. What is your take on that, including what we've just heard from, the boss, who is right there at the coalface, as it were?
Yeah, I am a bit punch drunk too, if that's okay for me to use. I'm not sure if that's as broadly used here in the US, but I'll roll with that term because, yeah, it has felt like, you know, in a very short amount of time, the momentum shift here in the industry has been like a 180, and we just keep on getting more and more milestones, you know, across the board. And it's really just shifted in a positive direction. And I'm surprised, as probably you are as well, in a good way, of just kind of how that momentum's building up. And so, yeah, I think carrying this going forward, it's going to bring even more excitement for us and our listeners and our audience to kind of just follow along, right?
Absolutely. It's only July. Just remember that. It's only July. And we've got the elections coming up. And as Sui said, potential changes at the preeminent regulator, the SEC, as well as potential legislative changes a little bit further down the line. So, yeah, the roller coaster should keep going for a little while, I think.
Yes, for sure.
Absolutely. Brilliant, brilliant. Okay, guys, so we hope that you enjoyed that conversation as much as we did. And if you did, don't forget, you can find a whole bunch of other CFB Talks Digital Assets episodes on your favorite podcast platform. Beyond that, do navigate to cfbenchmarks.com to find all of our other content, quarterly attribution reports, market monthlies, blog posts, and newsletters. And while you're there, don't forget to read the new research report by our research team, Ether, a strategic asset for the decentralized economy, that will get you 100% up to speed in everything that you need for this new product class within the new digital asset class of ETFs, right? Okay, so apart from all that, thank you guys, the audience, listening and viewing. We'll see you again for another episode of CFB Talks Digital Assets. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to CFB Talks Digital Assets. This recording is for informational purposes only and should not be considered investment advice. It is not intended, nor should it be considered an invitation or inducement to buy or sell any of the underlying instruments cited, including but not limited to crypto assets, financial instruments, or any instruments that reference any index provided by CF Benchmarks Limited. This recording is not intended to persuade or incite you to buy or sell a security or securities noted within. Any commentary, interviews, and discussions are opinions only and should not be considered a personalized recommendation. Please contact your financial advisor or professional before making any investment decision. Some of the underlying instruments cited within this recording may be restricted to certain customer categories in certain jurisdictions.